Hey everyone, welcome to the Front Stretch Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. Now I'll be joined by my colleague Mike Neff momentarily as we'll discuss a lackluster cup race at Sonoma over the weekend, as well as the trucks trucking away at Gateway. Martin Truex Jr. dominated the race at Sonoma, leading 59 of 90 laps, and his only competition was really Kyle Busch. A lot of the focus in the media this week is there's a rivalry between the two Joe Gibbs Racing cars, so we'll get into that. We'll also discuss Ross Chastain's comeback performance at Gateway over the weekend after getting the victory taken away last week at Iowa. And this may be a little spoiler alert, we both think he's now the championship favorite. Also, Todd Gilliam calls into the show to discuss his 2019, mentioning that his first third of the season was horrible, but in recent weeks he believed the Ford team has made gains at Kyle Busch Motorsports. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the Front Stretch Podcast on Apple iTunes, as it helps us out tremendously. Now let's talk Sonoma and Gateway with Neff. All right, Neff, kind of an interesting and I would say lackluster cup race at Sonoma this past weekend. NASCAR brought back the carousel, and in my opinion, it didn't do too much. It took away some passing zones. You had Martin Truex Jr. with a dominant car, a lot of strategy. But Neff, this is Truex's fourth win in the past eight races. About 2 months ago, one of the topics of conversation was, what's wrong with Truex? And now he's got four wins. So what about Truex leading 59 of the 90 laps?
And he had the car. He and Kyle were obviously the class of the field. I mean, when you win by 30-something seconds, it was actually funny watching at the end of the race when the two of them crossed the finish line and then they were doing all the post-race talking and all that kind of stuff, and you're watching the scoring pylon, and it took forever before Blaney finally got across there. But yeah, those two guys had it figured out, and the racing I thought was, like you said, a bit on the lackluster side. We've kind of come to expect road courses to be the new short tracks, and it really wasn't. And I don't know. I liked the idea of adding the carousel. I really thought it was going to add a couple passing zones, but it just didn't seem to. And I don't know. I don't really know what the deal was this weekend. It seemed like everybody was just kind of distanced out. Even on restarts, it seemed like pretty quickly, by the time you got to the carousel, everybody was in a straight line. And after that, it was kind of a follow the leader deal. And I mean, even in the first stage, William Byron took off.
Yeah,
he was like 10 or 12 seconds ahead by the time the stage ended. So You can't always have game seven moments. And this was one of those weekends where a couple guys had it figured out. I know Denny Hamlin was quick in the second stage, and he seemed to be coming at the end. Obviously, without a caution, he was going to get nowhere near Kyle and Martin. But he was at least putting on a show coming through the field, starting 23rd after he won the second stage. But in general, it was... Yeah, I mean, it was old road course days where a couple guys were really good road course racers and everybody else was out there trying to stay on the asphalt.
Yeah, and I know we're, and me especially, I love road course racing. I'm a huge advocate for it. Bring all the road courses to NASCAR. And I think, you know, there will be a few that get added to the schedule in 2021, but this wasn't a good showing. And even look back to last year, right? We had the Roval, which... The ending was great. It was a decent race, I thought. I think at the time, you didn't think it was a great race, except for the final few laps.
No, actually, I admitted that it was way better than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be god-awful, and it ended up being a better race than I thought it would. But I'm with you. I think the ending might have clouded our opinions of it a little more than what it was really all about. But at the same time, I thought it was a better race than I had anticipated. Right. I thought it was going to be an absolute parade.
Right. So where I'm going with that is last year's road course races weren't the best either. You had Watkins Glen. You had Chase Elliott win his first race at Watkins Glen. And Truex was on his heels most of the final run, could never get by, ran out of gas on the final lap. And then third place was way back, kind of like this week at Sonoma. Last year's road course at Sonoma wasn't the best. Truex won again. He's proven that he's... probably the best road racer right now in NASCAR. He's got three wins in the last five races at road courses and then finished second at Watkins Glen, even though running out of gas. And then also at the Roval, he was leading on the final turn when Jimmy Johnson ran on a tail and just took him out. So, I mean, I don't know. This wasn't a good showing for Sonoma, and I don't think the last two or three years have been. So we want more road courses, but if this continues, I mean, I don't know if we'll get them.
In all honesty, I think if we lose the stages, or I shouldn't say lose the stages, lose the stage cautions, I think you would make it a lot different. The fact that we have the stage cautions kind of throws the strategy all out the window. You basically end up with two strategies, and it kind of throws a monkey wrench in the whole deal because there's no real way to get off sequence with anybody. And I think if we went ahead and did stages but did not throw a caution and just paid the points and allowed the whole race to evolve organically, I think it would be a different event. And I think you could really get back to what we had a couple, 3 years ago. But, you know, as you just pointed out, the road races the last couple years have not been really good. And what have we had added to it the last couple of years? And that's stage racing. So in the road course world, I think stage racing cautions need to go away.
I totally agree with you. Like you and I both said, the past two or three years, the road racing hasn't been great. And what this does is, you know, you get guys like William Byron who checked out, right? But he also was 14th in points coming into the race. He wants to accumulate as many points as he can. And I'm surprised more drivers on that bubble didn't kind of run the same strategy because they wouldn't have lost as many points, like an Eric Jones or even a Jimmy Johnson, who right now is outside the playoffs by a point. But then you had guys like Logano and Hamlin also do it, which I could see why they did it. But in the long run, it's going to cost them because Hamlin, I mean, he came from, what, 21st to 5th in that final 45-lap stage. I mean, that was a great drive for him. But he had no shot to get into the lead, like you said earlier, because he was 30-something seconds back.
Yep.
And also what this does is if you're within 45, because, you know, with the carousel being added, it added about 20, 25 seconds worth of time to a lap. So you could be 45 seconds back and still be on the lead lap, which is kind of crazy.
Nah, I mean, that's road course racing. I mean, it's the same with Pocono and Indy. If you're 35 seconds back, you still are on the lead lap because it's such a big course. So I was okay with that. We talked a little bit before we started the podcast today. I'm not an advocate of how short these races are. I know I'm in the enormous minority that I believe all cup races should be at least 500 miles long. And I know nobody else is on board with me having 993 laps at Martinsville, although I think that would be epic. But it would also be 7.5 hours and guys would be changing brake rotors during a race, which, again, would be epic. But the fact that these road courses are so short and they knock 20 laps off because of adding the carousel, and I'm just like, why? And I was talking with somebody on Twitter yesterday about Watkins Glen and adding the boot, and they're talking about cutting it down to like 60 laps if they did that. And I'm like, why? It's the shortest race of the season right now. Why not go ahead and make it 350 miles long and run 100 laps at 3.45 if you add the boot? These are supposed to be tests of man and machine. And we've gotten away of the test of machine because everything is so bulletproof. People were shocked that we actually had engine failures this weekend. And, you know, it's one of those deals that you just don't see that anymore. And I think that if we lengthen some of these road course races out to really tax these drivers, and admittedly, guys were getting out of the cars this weekend worn out. And it was something that we don't see very often anymore. And imagine if they had to go another 20 laps, how worn out they would have been. And it could really have made a difference in the outcome, the physical stamina of the drivers. And I think that adds an element. And we're at a point now where we have to start adding some elements because the cars are so indestructible, they're not going to break. So let's make the drivers break.
That's a good point because unlike many other tracks we go to, you're actually shifting here a lot, a ton. So, like, 11 times a lap. So, you know, if the drivers do get fatigued and there's more laps in the race, then there is a more likelihood that something could happen or something unpredictable could happen.
Mistakes happen.
Yeah, of course. Now, I agree with you because, you know, this race for years, Sonoma has always been 110 laps. And this was, you know, despite cutting down 20 laps, which in theory should be a shorter race, even though they're adding 30 seconds per lap, roughly, because of the longer course. It was still the quickest race in Sonoma history, 2 hours and 42 minutes. So, I mean, I agree with you. And there was, you know, this was only the second time that there wasn't a caution outside of the stage breaks, which kind of surprised me. You knew it was going to be spread out probably. And, I mean, Sonoma last year, there hasn't been many cautions at Sonoma the past few years, which, I don't know. I guess there shouldn't be. Maybe there should be because it's tighter racing, but then spread out this week. So, I don't know, Neff. In general, though, I wasn't a fan of this race, and I can't really say it's because of the rules package this time.
Yeah, no, it just, like I said, I like the idea of adding the carousel back, I think, just because it adds a little more to it, and I thought the entrance into the carousel was actually going to be a passing zone, but it didn't play out that way, and I think in the end it actually hurt because of the fact that you used to be able to go up that hill side by side and come down and race all the way to I guess they call it turn seven, before you really got straightened out to go up through the S's. And with the addition of the carousel, by the time they got to turn three, they pretty much had to be single file. You weren't going into that carousel side by side. And the end result was we ended up in the single file way earlier, and that kind of killed some of the racing. So I don't know. I really think doing away with the stage cautions is the first step that we've got to take to try to fix this back to where we were.
Agreed. Now, I want to get back to Truex, because like I said earlier, this is his fourth win in the past eight races. In that same time, Kyle Busch, who also has four wins this year, has only got one in the past eight races. Fox and a lot of media outlets are kind of hyping this rivalry up. And Kyle Busch mentioned to it after the race how it dates back to the Busch series in 2004 when Truex beat him for the championship. They're on the same team now, and they've essentially been on the same team for the past 4 years, with Truex being at Furniture Row for the past three, you know, aligned with Toyota. Do you think this will be a rivalry?
There's a difference between a rivalry and a bitter rivalry. And I think that's where everybody's kind of getting lost on this thing, is they're wanting these guys to, like, be getting in fistfights when they get out of their cars.
Not going
to
happen.
And wrecking each other on purpose. And that's a bitter rivalry. That's Jeff Bodine and Dale Earnhardt, where Big Bill calls them in the offense and tells those monkeys they got to get their acts together. At this point, there's an absolute rivalry because, I mean, we've seen it. Kyle Busch hates to lose. And he may not show it as much outwardly, but Martin Truex hates to lose. And you want to talk about hating to lose, there's nobody in a garage that hates to lose more than Cole Pearn. And if you see him after a race when they finish second, that dude is fuming. And so it's not a bitter rivalry because, as you said, they're teammates and they're not wrecking each other and they're running pretty clean. But I promise you, it's a rivalry. And Kyle Busch wants to win every race that he's in. And Martin Truex wants to win every race they're in. And some people may disagree, but I think it's even a more bitter pill to swallow when you lose to a guy that's in the same equipment you're in. Because that means that guy flat out beat you straight up and was better than you. And for these type A personality guys to admit somebody was better than them is really hard. And so I absolutely think there's a rivalry there, and I think it's going to get bigger and bigger the more Martin keeps winning and the two of them end up repeatedly having close to the same number of win totals and repeatedly both make it to Homestead to compete for championships. And if that happens over three or four more years, who knows? We may get to the bitter point. But right now, it's an absolute rivalry, because they're two of the three or four best drivers in the sport, or at least best teams in the sport. And as long as they are continually looking at each other's back bumpers while they're going for wins, it's going to continue to be a really heated rivalry. It's just not going to be a deal where they start wrecking each other.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's just not Truex's way either. I mean, we've seen Kyle go after people, whether it be Joey Logano in 2017 at Las Vegas, when he went over and then the whole 22 team kind of took him on. But Truex, I mean, he could have had all intents and purposes gone after Logano last year and didn't at Martinsville because that's just not the way he races. But when you talk about rivalry, if you look back at the past 3.5 years, so the start of the 2016 season, Kyle Busch has won 21 races. Martin Truex Jr. has won 20. Kyle Busch won the 2015 championship, so the year before 2016, and then Truex won the 2017 championship. Both their first championships at the cup level, they're one and only thus far. So I do agree with you that there is a little bit of a rivalry there, but yeah, I do not see this going anywhere towards a bitter rivalry anytime soon, because Truex, and deservedly so, you know, he went to Jacobs Racing. Now he's performing up to where we thought he would be the first 8 races, but you just had to give it time with Cole Pearn. And like you said, Cole Pearn hates to lose, and he's very blunt about it. And after the race, you know, your comment as to finishing second to a teammate and them kind of being better than you, losing to the same equipment, Kyle Busch alluded straight to that, saying it sucks to lose to a teammate. So, yeah, I mean, this is something to watch going forward, and, you know, it's going to be a battle all throughout the year.
I agree. I think these two guys and the two Penske guys right now are the ones that we expect to be in Homestead. Now, we've talked all along that Stuart Haas will probably catch up to them before we get to the playoffs. And we thought Hendrick was making that swing. Now I'm not so sure, but again, we'll see what happens as we hit a few more of the ovals here. But it's going to be those two for sure, barring some really weird events, will be in Homestead and part of the Final Four. And I think they are definitely, at this point, considered the two guys that are the favorites.
And Kyle's been the last 4 Final Fours, and Truex has been in 3 of the past 4. So, it's, you know, like you said earlier, they are the top, 2 of the top 4 drivers over the past 5 years or so. Now, Neff, I feel like we got to move on here. And, you know, Ryan Blaney had a good run in 3rd, but Matt DiBenedetto kind of surprised me, finishing 4th. That was a hell of a run. Best finish of his career, first top 5. His prior best was with BK Racing in 2016, finishing 6th at Bristol. Neff, this was a great run for that team. His first top 10 of the year. You know, he mentioned on the podcast a couple months ago that they've had speed this year. They just haven't had the finishes. He's had 4 DNFs in 16 races. But, I mean, this could turn the whole season around, honestly. They could build off this.
Yeah, absolutely. And in all honesty, I don't know that he would necessarily fess up to it. And I don't know if any of the other Toyota folks might. But in all reality, I think he realizes that he's racing for his job right now.
Oh, yeah.
Because Christopher Bell's got to go somewhere. And the discussion has been that it's going to be him or Eric Jones going into 95 and the other one going to stay at Gibbs. So it's, if he's not performing in this car, he's going to be out of it. So the fact that he's got this top 4, and is, we've been watching him all season. I feel like they've stepped up their game, and the help from Joe Gibbs has made a big difference. And they've had a few opportunities for finishes like this, and it's good to see him finally close one out. I've said it all season, and I still feel like if we get a surprise winner this year, somebody that we don't anticipate, I think it's going to be DiBenedetto. I think he's the one that's going to catch lightning in a bottle on a weekend at, I don't know, Kansas, and, you know, and end up running away at the end of a race, and whether he wins it on fuel mileage or whether he wins it on a late race restart by staying out or something, who knows? But they've got the equipment that is, it's not Joe Gibbs equipment, but it's close, and they've got the potential. That team's really starting to figure it out and learn how to run up front. And I've always said that Matt's had the talent, and he's showing it off now. So it was a great run, and I was super happy for him. And I'm hoping that it's one of many by the time the end of the year gets here.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was surprised it took 16 races to get a top 10, but they've just been snake bitten by bad luck this year. Whether it be Bristol, where he was running the top 10 most of the race, and then pitted late, finished 12th, which was his previous best finish this year. But I look at Levine Family Racing, and you know, you look at how they've improved throughout the years, right? They were once a start and park team, then they ran a partial schedule. Then Michael McDowell came over a couple years ago, and they were competitive. Finished 4th at Daytona in the July race 2 years ago. Casey Kane comes over last year, and of course, they weren't with Toyota yet. But I think he elevated the team a little bit. Also finished 4th at Daytona in July. And so this was their third top 5 finish as a team, all with 3 different drivers. But this was the first track other than Daytona that got a top 5. Granted, it's a road course, and they haven't put it on a, I guess, regular oval track yet. But I could definitely see that coming. I could also see him winning Daytona. He obviously led 49 laps there in the spring for the 500, which was a race high. I'm with you. I feel like, you know, if any surprise winner, maybe a Chris Busch or two, I could see him maybe sneaking up and getting one somewhere because they've been pretty strong. But I could see DiBenedetto getting it because he's in good, you know, he's in solid equipment.
Yeah, and Buescher had a good run, too. He was up near the front most of the day on Sunday, and that team continues to do well and figure this thing out. So I'm with you on that, too. They could be another one that ends up catching the right weekend and everything fall in place. They end up stealing a win, too. I could see it happen.
Got it. Now, moving along, Neff, I want to talk about a few more things in the Cup race. You know, we've talked about him quite a bit on the podcast this year, actually, but Ryan Newman finished 7th. It surprised me how well the 6 team has done this year. Granted, they're on the cut line right now. They've only got 5 top 10s. But the 6 car last year had, I think, 1 top 10, 2 top 10s. In 16 races, they got 5, and it was like 63 races or something. I put a stat on Twitter the other day that they had their last 5 top 10s. So Newman's definitely elevated this team, I believe, in another strong performance by the 6 team with Scott Graves as the crew chief.
True, and Newman's one of those guys that's always been a surprising road racer.
Indeed.
You know, you never really pictured him being a guy that's really good at road racing. I don't know that he's ever really been one to contend for a win, but he's got a lot of those, you know, barely top 5, solid top 10 type finishes at road courses, and you're always looking through the results going, Newman, really, on a road course? But he's good at getting the most that he can out of equipment, and we've seen that. I put him and Kurt Busch in the same category. Those are those two of those guys that just, you know, at the end of the day when you're loading your stuff back up that it's as used up as it could be, that they have put every ounce that they could get out of that car onto the track and there's nothing left of it. And I agree. I was a little surprised this year that they've done as well as they have, just because I think organizationally there are some problems there that are causing them to finish where they do. And to see him get what he's gotten out of it, I think that says a lot about Newman. And I don't know if it's something that going forward, you know, in a year or two when he gets out of that ride, and somebody else gets in it, if they're going to be able to sustain it or not. We'll find out also if Stenhouse starts doing a little better. He's been the standard bearer for Roush for a while, and now Newman's come in and is kind of looking better than him. So I don't know. I'm hoping that the stuff carries over to him, and they both kind of elevate it, because for a long time, Roush was one of the premier teams in his sport, and they've become and also ran over the last decade.
For sure, yeah, we've definitely seen the decline of Roush over the past decade or so. Now, I was looking at some of Newman's stats earlier this week. I guess it was yesterday, as we record this. And, he hasn't led a lap this year, which is surprising. But also, this is by far the furthest into a season that he hasn't led a lap. The previous was 2010, and then I think it took 7 or 8 races, and then he finally led some laps. But as he mentioned, and he's pretty blunt, he'll tell you how it is. He's a straight shooter. they are off. They're not there yet. They're not in contention running top five consistently, and they haven't run top five most of the year in any races. Stenhouse has one top five at, I believe it was Charlotte, off the top of my head. He was running top five at Kansas and then faded to 11th. But, yeah, comparing him to Stenhouse this year, it's kind of like night and day. Stenhouse was good at the beginning of the year. Newman's turned around the past eight races or so, and Stenhouse is 20th in points now with two top tens. So I thought Newman would elevate this team, but maybe not the sixth team to this much.
Agreed. Yeah, I thought he might, and I didn't know. I mean, after Kenseth being there, you expect Kenseth to kind of elevate him. And I felt like he added to it, and I think they got better with him being there. But it seems like Newman has added even more. And, you know, I guess if you think about it, that probably makes sense that Kenseth went in and steered them in the right direction of what he knew to make cars faster. Now you got Newman coming in with a perspective that has never been at Roush before and shows them some stuff that they've never thought of before. So you throw those together, I guess it would make sense that it's picked up. But I'm with you. I still think it's a surprising turnaround. And I think they're continuing to make strides. Will they win a race? You never know. I mean, it's Newman, and that's one thing about him is that they are great at stealing wins. If you look at his wins historically, almost all of them have been on tire strategy or fuel strategy. Very rarely does he win a race where he just goes out and whips them. And it's always kind of a thinking man's thing, and I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen again with Roush.
Yeah, I mean, you're dead on with that. But maybe with the exception of 2003, when he won eight races with Penske and was, you know, fire. Pretty much every week, the car to beat. But yeah, he's definitely elevated that team. Neff, unless you have any other topics about the Cup race, let's end on this one. I was kind of surprised with some of the guys that finished outside the top 10 on Sunday. Like a Quint Boyer, who stated that this was his go-to track. You mentioned Kurt Busch. He wasn't even a factor all race. Finished 13th. And they were kind of on the same strategy that Truex and Kyle were on, who finished obviously 30 seconds ahead of everybody else. Who was your biggest disappointment from the week? Because I would have to narrow it down to those two.
I mean, Busch was up in the running early, and then I think they just kind of got themselves crossed up or out of sequence, and it ended up hurting them. Boyer was honest and said it was just one of the worst days they've had in forever, that he still loves Sonoma and it's still his favorite track. But yeah, they were out to lunch most of the day. My disappointment's Larson. You're on the pole for the third time in a row and they drop the green. And I mean, you talk about dropping like a stone. he fell through the field, and yeah, he managed to get a top 10 out of the thing, but to start on the pole and to be an absolute non-factor by like lap three, that was the disappointment for me. I mean, yeah, Keselowski finishes all the way back in 18th, and they seem to be just thrashing all day long. But I thought in my book, Larson was the biggest disappointment. I mean, to once again have the speed to be on pole and for the third time, not capitalize on it at all. It's just they've got to figure out something with that team and what they're doing, because whatever they're doing to get short run speed and set on a pole does not work in a race.
Yeah, you're dead on with that too. I'm surprised. Obviously, three straight poles at Sonoma, like you mentioned, but I mean, this was his best finish of the three races. If you want to look on the positives, his average finish in the other two was 19th coming into the weekend. But, yeah, to have that one lap speed, or putting, I guess, two laps together because he was fastest in both rounds of qualifying, and then just to drop instantly, like you said, not even leading a lap. Not even leading a lap.
He threw out a parachute, man. It was terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting that happened. But as a whole, I mean, yeah, Kurt, I guess, was up there at the beginning. I mean, he started 16th, so he had a fender rub right off the bat, first lap, with Clint, getting into Clint Boyer in the S's. And I expected a lot more out of him, because when you go to a road course, specifically Sonoma, you think of Boyer and Busch, but specifically Bush, because like last week when we talked about on the podcast a couple years back in the 51 car for James Finch.
Yeah, almost won it.
Yeah, and he had like a rear axle coming out of the car. So, I mean, he wheeled it to what, second or third, and could have won the damn thing. And then he gets in, you know, obviously he's been good there for years, but then gets into the one car, which has been successful there with Jamie McMurray in the past, winning a multitude of poles. And he just wasn't a factor. I don't know. I guess we're on the Chip Ganassi Racing bandwagon as far as this appointment at Sonoma.
Yeah, and again, they had speed, but they don't put it together for the race. So something they've got programmatically across the board seems to be a problem for them. And the other one is, look at both of the Penske teams.
Yeah.
I mean, 18th and 23rd.
I mean, Logano had battery issues.
You're Penske?
Right. Yeah,
you kind of expect a little more out of a team who's made their living in open wheel on road courses.
True. Logano did have battery issues that he was really fighting all race. So that kind of mired him down to 23rd. I know at one point they had to make an extended stop under green. So I'm surprised they finished 23rd, honestly, and on the lead lap. But Keselowski was, and he's mentioned it in the past, like this is his worst track on the circuit. And then Byron fading to 19th. I was kind of surprised by that, but he still had a really good points day, scored the fifth most points and gained points on the bubble. So mission accomplished for Chad Knaus and William Byron. Neff, any final things on the cup race at Sonoma?
Only other thing I had was I saw some people dissing on Cody Ware and trying to blame the car for his problems. I mean, he got into somebody and knocked a crush panel out of the thing. And anytime you do that, you've got fumes coming in the car. It doesn't matter if you're a Hendrick car or a Rick Ware racing car. If the crush panel's out and fumes are getting in, it's going to have an impact on the driver. So for the people that were dissing on Rick Ware Racing, you need to check yourselves that it was a problem with a crush panel coming out, and it didn't matter whose car it was. The driver was going to be taking in fumes and ultimately probably knocked out of the seat.
For sure. We saw that earlier this year at Dover when the race got rained out to Monday. Denny Hamlin spun out, blew a right rear tire, and it knocked the crush panel out. And then after the race, he was sitting down next to the car, needing medical attention at the infield care center. So we've seen it with Kyle Busch before at Charlotte. When he also got into the wall, the crush panel comes out on the right rear. It's crazy what that can do. But yeah, not a joke at all. And it's serious stuff. So
yep.
Glad Cody's all right. But Neff, in a way, I'm also glad to see that Ross Chastain's all right, because he got the win taken away from him last week. They lost the appeal. We talked about that in depth last week on the podcast. But he came out, didn't have the best truck at Gateway. But him and Phil Gold, however you say the last name, probably butchered it. They had the right strategy there at the end, got him out front. There was a late caution. And Ross, he was on the Door Bumper Clear podcast this week on Dirty Mo Media. And he was saying how he was frustrated, getting kind of all antsy. His heart rate was way up when the caution came out because he saw that the trucks were catching him because he didn't take tires there at the end. That was a strategy call. They got him out front. So he didn't know if he'd be able to hold him off anyway. But then there was a late race caution and he held him off for whatever it was, five laps or so. Neff, end of story. Chastain gets the win and is likelihood now in the truck playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, again, we talked about it last week. To get into the top 20 is not a challenge. I mean, it was amazing. I give him total credit. He made the call to stay out on the tires. Guys behind him were faster. But it's one of those deals where you got to look at who's chasing you. And you've got Christian Eckes and Todd Gilliland and Stuart Friesen, none of whom have won a race. And are young and inexperienced. And, I mean, Ross is no, you know, AARP member, but he's been around this thing for a while. And so he had the experience, and he used that to his advantage. And you end up, Eckes ends up getting spun on the last lap, so that cost him a bunch. But he got it done and gets out of the car and points it to ride height on the left front, which was kind of fun. And I was glad for him. I mean, that's one of those, you can't get redemption any quicker than the week after you lose a win. And again, it's Nice Motorsports. They've come a long way. Big part of that is Ross's ability. For the people that were claiming Ross is the greatest driver in NASCAR right now, I think you need to check yourselves a little bit. But he may be the hottest driver right now. And he is out there. I questioned his choice to go to the trucks for points, but I don't know. I mean, I feel like that team has the best chance of winning a championship. And he got an extra $50,000 to spend on watermelons. So you got to love that, too.
Yeah, he's only 38 points out of 20th, so he'll get in probably by the next race, but this weekend, or at least close to it, because none of those guys that he's battling run full time. So there's a good likelihood that this podcast next week he'll be in. But now if you look at the points, right, and so he's taken the checkered flag first three times, only he has two wins, right? So compare that to the rest of the truck series. Moffitt got the win because of last week. Then Austin Hill, right. And then Austin Hill's got a win. Johnny Sauter's got a win. That's it for truck regulars. And then Ross is two.
So Kyle has five.
Yeah, exactly. But not a truck regular running for truck points. Ross, I didn't think we'd really be talking about this ever this year because he was for Xfinity points, like you said. We questioned you. I think everyone questioned the move to truck points so late in the season, just 3 weeks ago. I would say he's the championship favorite. And he's the guy. He hasn't led the most laps at all, but he's the most consistent, in my opinion. He's consistently one of the fastest cars.
Yeah, I mean, I still look at it, and I still think Johnny Sauter has got to be a favorite. And Enfinger, I mean, he's so consistent, it's just a matter of can he win the races? That's the thing that you always wonder about Grant, is he takes care of his stuff, he races people extra clean, but I think that in the end can bite him to where he doesn't get the win, and that win may be the key to him winning a championship. So I feel like Enfinger and Sauter are going to have a shot, and possibly Matt Crafton. He's another one. It seems to be just a tick off right now, but I think in the long run he'll probably get it. But I'm with you. I think of guys that are in it, I think Chastain has shown that he can get it done when the money's on the line. And when we're in a winner-take-all championship scenario like we are now at Homestead, that's the kind of mentality and kind of ability it takes. And he's the guy in the trucks that's got it.
For sure. Now get this, Neff. If the postseason were to start today, which there's still five races left.
The season ended today.
Right now, both Harrison Byrne and Todd Gillen are outside the cut line because of Ross's win. So Burton moves down to 9th, Gillen to 10th. Of course, that's if Ross gets in the top 20, which he will very soon. And you got Ben Rhodes currently, 69 points out of the lead. No, he's 63 points. So he's got 56 points on Harrison Burton for that final spot. That's a lot of points to make up, almost a full race. Yep. Do you think both these KBM trucks miss the playoffs?
No, I think one of them is going to get a win. I think at some point over the next handful of races, Gilliland's going to get a win and get himself in position. Harrison, I'm not as confident with. Harrison, and again, they're both young kids and they're both still figuring this stuff out. But I just feel like Todd has led races and shown a little more upfront ability. Harrison's getting finishes, but he's not up there banging on the front of the field. And Todd, periodically, I mean, he finished second again on Saturday night. So he's around the front a little bit more, and I think he's the one that's going to end up grabbing a win before this is over and get a shot to run for the title.
I could see that for sure, because he's got 2 second-place finishes, I think, in the past 3 races, which are his only top fives of the year. So that's the part about Todd that scares me. He seems to be fast in the early portion of the race, but then fades off throughout the race. And then with Harrison, I mean, he was running top 3 most of the night the other night and then got taken out, finished 16th, which, I mean, that lost him 13 points. Should he have finished 3rd? And at one point, all four of the four, all 4 of them running the top 5 with Chandler Smith and Christian Eckes, too. I thought Eckes was going to win that race for a while because he had the fastest truck there at the end, catching Ross on newer tires. I don't know, man. I mean, Kyle's been blunt about his drivers, obviously, recently in the past couple months, really all year. If neither of them make the playoffs, though, I don't know. I wouldn't want to be... I'd want to be a fly on the wall in KBM, I'll tell you that.
He'd be curious, but when it's all said and done, I think there is influence from outside of the organization that will kind of rein things in a little bit and help bring a sense of perspective to the fact that we're talking about 2 teenagers.
True.
And yes, they're in the best trucks in the business. They're not getting the most out of them that they should be, but at the same time, they're learning and they're slowly but surely finishing closer to the front. And I think we've lost perspective over the years as to how hard it is to win these races, and getting young kids to win these races is not an easy thing to do. And we've had a couple youngsters come through that have done it pretty quickly, and that's kind of jaded people's opinions of it. But in all honesty, I think they're making strides. I think they're doing a good job. And when the whole season plays out, even if they don't make the playoffs, I think you'll see them in those trucks next year, and next year will be the one deciding season. If they come back in 2020 and they can't get it done, then I think you'll see them lose their rides.
Yeah, it's a tough deal because, I mean, we're comparing them to what Kyle's had over the past 3 years or so. So you've got William Byron. William Byron did something that's really unheard of. You go K&N 1 year, trucks the next, Xfinity the next, and then Cup. And he was successful.
And won Rookie of the Year at all.
Yeah, and he won the 2 championships.
Was Eric Jones the one Rookie of the Year at all?
He won 2 championships, though, in K&N and then also yeah. Xfinity, and should have won the truck title. Had the best car all year, or truck all year long. You're comparing him to Christopher Bell, who we both think is among the top.
Yeah, let's be real.
among the top 2 or 3, probably the best prospect out there right now of drivers not in the Cup Series. We're comparing him to Noah Gragson, who I think is more of a fair comparison, because Noah did not set the world on fire at KBM. He won 1 race his rookie year, and then 1 race last year, and that's it. That's all of his wins at KBM. Just 2 of them. Probably should have won about 5 or 6, but should have, could have, would have. It won 2. Todd's been in contention. Todd should have won 3 races last year. The one that sticks out is the one that Noah took him out in at the road course.
Yeah, in Canada.
He ran out a few on the last lap at Texas last fall while leading. He's had a lot of things bite him. He's been snake bitten too, just like DiBenedetto we talked about earlier. This year, very inconsistent. Some of that of his own doing, some of it not. He has to win. He's over 80 points out right now with 5 races to go. And I could see it happening. You got Chicago this week. He could win there. I mean, it's similar. Not similar to Texas, but it's 1.5 miles. That seems to be kind of his bread and butter. So maybe he gets it done this weekend.
You never know. I mean, it's 1.5 miles, and KBM trucks are good on 1.5 miles, so he should have a shot for sure.
Of course. Now, Neff, anything else on the truck race?
No. I mean, Christian Eckes, I thought, did a good showing. And I think I've had questions about Christian since he's come up. I've seen him, and it's a weird comparison, but kind of a Haley Deegan kind of thing, where he won some races at the late model level, but he was always moving people to do it, and he wasn't winning clean. And I feel like he has cleaned that up a bit, and he's starting to show more of his talent. And he's another one of these guys that I think, given the right circumstances, I think he can be pretty good. If he ends up in some less than good equipment, we will see.
Of course. I mean, that's the deal with a lot of guys.
Yeah, that's true.
But, okay, moving right along, Neff, you wanted to talk a little bit about Ty Gibbs. Won the ARCA race this past weekend at Gateway, led 32 laps. He's raced 6 races this year in Joe Gibbs Racing Equipment and has top 8 finishes in all 6 of them, 3 runner-up finishes, and then, of course, the win. I got to be honest with you. I don't know a ton about Ty. He's very young, 17. But
looks 12.
Yeah. Actually, he's 16, turning 17 this year. So, later in October.
Still looks 12.
What are your thoughts on him? Because obviously a big win for him and for Joe Gibbs Racing, honestly.
Yeah, it's a cool thing. I mean, I've known Ty for a long time. I mean, they announced at Millbridge Speedway back when he was running box stocks, which is, you know, 5-horsepower Briggs and Stratton things when he was 6 or 7 years old. And he's working his way up through the ranks. He ran late models with Greg Marlowe for the last year or two. And Marlowe's a great teacher and did a lot of work with him and developed his driving ability quite a bit. Greg will even tell you that it was kind of he had done everything he thinks he was going to do with him. And it was kind of time for them to move on to something. And this ARCA thing came up. I feel like it's a little early for him to be in ARCA, but I feel that way for most kids that go into ARCA. I think they get thrown in there a little quick. I have to remind myself that he's almost 17 years old because, like I said, if you see him, he's 5 foot nothing and looks 12 years old. And you got to remind yourself that he's got a lot of experience. But he's shown talent. He's refining his abilities. He's got, obviously, a lot of good teachers around him, which is something that I think he's very good at taking advantage of. A kid in that situation could very easily get a big head and ruin his opportunity. And I feel like he is very willing to listen and learn from people with experience. And needless to say, he has the ability to be around a lot of people in the sport that have a lot of experience and have a lot of championships. So I think that he's taking advantage of that. At the same time, I think he's in good equipment. And ARCA is all about the handful of teams that have good equipment. But he's taking advantage of it. And again, he's one of those guys that in his time has wrecked a few people and ruffled some feathers. But I think he's learning how to win and how to race without doing that. And if hopefully coach is going to be patient with him and move him up slowly into the ranks, we'll see. I would bet he'll be in a truck in probably 2021, which wouldn't be bad. I hope they don't, you know, if they give him 1 or 2 starts in 2020, that'd be fine. I really hope they don't throw him into a truck in 2020. I think that'd be too soon. But as far as just, he's a really good kid. He works really hard at the outside of the car stuff as well. And I think he's on the right path. And barring some unforeseen circumstances, I think we'll see him at the cup level someday. And I think it'll be kind of neat to see Joe Gibbs' grandson if he ultimately ends up being a winner at the cup level.
For sure. I mean, you look, you know, I said earlier I don't know much about him, but if you compare his stats, which he doesn't have, he only has those few starts in ARCA, but compared to Riley Herbst, who has 44 starts over the past 2.5 years, he's only got 1 win in the same equipment. So, granted, this is a short track, but hey, you got to be at all types of tracks. So, good to see him win. It would be cool to see him move up, but I think, like Haley Deegan, you brought her up earlier, they got to go slow with him, bringing him up the ranks. So,
wait a minute, did you just call Gateway a short track?
No, I guess I did, but
you did. I don't think it's a short
track. Yeah, I misspoke. Regardless,
okay, just checking.
A shorter track because what is it? A mile?
It's 1.25 miles, I believe.
Got it. I thought to be you could only run. You had to be over 18 or whatever to run over a mile, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
In trucks.
Got it.
No. Arca don't care. You'd be 10 years old. If you got the money in the car, they'll let you run in Arca. That's a funny story. I'm talking to Brett Bodine about that. Brett Bodine does the driver certification, as it is, for NASCAR. And he said that's one of his frustrations, is that ARCA tends to let people that haven't got a lot of experience go straight to running super speedways. And it's a frustration he has because people will come to him and be like, hey, I ran ARCA at Talladega. I should be able to go run Daytona in a truck. And Todd will be like, no, you haven't. You know, you got one race, but that didn't prove anything. You have to work your way up the ladder more. And so he has to fight with people that are given an opportunity to run the super speedways in ARCA, but haven't really cut their teeth at all the different tracks to be able to run the trucks.
Fair point. Now, I do know that we're going into an intermediate track this week, Neff, 1.5 miles.
With a curved backstretch.
Of course, it makes it unique. So we got Chicagoland Speedway this weekend. NBC's taking over, which I'm excited about. You got Dale Jr. Yeah, you got, this is the 1 year anniversary of that. You got Dale Jr. back in the booth. But now if we got a triple header, we got a lot of racing. Let's start with the truck series. Who you got winning?
Golly, I haven't even thought about it yet. Can we pick against him? I think we gotta go Ross Chastain again.
Yeah.
He's hot. I think I'm going to change that because I just talked about him. Let's give Gilliland the nod that he finally breaks through and gets it done in trucks. So I'm going to go with Gilliland in the trucks.
Then I'm taking Chastain because he's red hot right now. He's crossed the finish line first in 3 of the past 6 truck races. He's awarded 2 of those wins. One of them that counts towards the playoffs. So I'm riding that bandwagon, man. I got Ross winning. Now, the Xfinity Series, it's going to be hard to beat the big three. Do you see anyone beating them?
Nah. I mean, it's as much as everybody's on the Chris Rebell bandwagon, too, I'm still going with Tyler Reddick, too. I mean, it's kind of like Chastain. Bell may be the dude, but Reddick is so hot right now. And, you know, they had a bad break this last race, but I think until Reddick has a race where he's running on all cylinders and doesn't win, I'm going to ride the Reddick bandwagon.
Fair. I feel like this isn't going to be a winning pick because it is going to be very hard to beat the big three, and they could very well finish 1 through 3. But Noah Gragson's been hot lately. I think he's got 4 straight top 6 finishes, which is the best stretch he's had in his young career at the Xfinity level. I'm going to go Noah Gragson. And also, he's performed well at 1.5 miles in the past in the trucks. And he's done all right with them this year in Xfinity. So I'll go with Noah Gragson. Probably probably underrated pick, an underrated driver. Now we got the Cup Series. Neff last year had one of the most thrilling finishes of the year, probably the most thrilling finish with Kyle Busch, Kyle Larson. Who you got?
I'm taking Kevin Harvick. Kevin Harvick is a dude at Chicago, and Stuart Haas has been down a little bit this year, and I feel like this is going to be their coming out, and they're going to upset the JGR Penske apple cart and finally get somebody besides 3 other teams in victory lane this season.
That's a good pick. I guess I'll go Kyle Busch. He's got 4 wins this year, like we said. It's just hard to pick against him. And obviously he won last year's race, like we just said also. So I don't think it'll be as thrilling of a finish or a race this year because of the package. But I say it doesn't matter. Kyle Busch is going to check off another victory at the Cup level. So,
just to get back ahead of Truex.
Indeed.
Because they have a rivalry.
Yeah, of course. Now, Neff, any final thoughts before we sign off here?
I got to give one more shout-out this weekend to my man Ryan Preece for channeling his inner Mike Stefanik. He got totally hosed in the K&N race at Sonoma. They the cannon uses a cone rather than a zone, and you go at the same time. They were coming towards the line. He and
Hemric
were side by side. They went together. Hemric spun the tires, so Priest ends up having a car length advantage by the time they get to the turn, and NASCAR black flagged him for jumping to start. And it was total garbage. You can't, the week before you let Joey Logano start in turn three practically, and you don't throw a flag on him. And then these guys literally, you watch their noses lift at the same time. And then Reese got black flagged. Claire B catches him afterwards, and he went full on bullshit multiple times. And it was golden. For those of you that can remember back to the Battle at the Beach when Mike Stefanik got wrecked, I'll never forget it, man. I had it as my screensaver on my computer for a year. The picture of him sitting on the tailgate of that car, face just beat red, and they're trying to interview him, and he's trying not to get in trouble, and then he's like, "I can't say anything because I'll get in trouble." But that was bullshit. It was television gold. And Priest was the same way. He was trying so hard to be politically correct and say the right things while at the same time expressing his displeasure. But eventually it just boiled over on him, and he dropped bullshit like three times. And I don't blame him, because he had that race in the bag. He had a great restart. It was a fair restart. I mean, even if it was just kind of close, you can't black flag at that point in time. It's a terrible call. And I got to give him a fresh shout out, because it was awesome.
Yeah, that was a audio gold right there. That was an awesome interview. We as journalists love when drivers are blunt. Priest has that factor about him. He's kind of sneaky about it too. Like we expect it from Kyle, any Brad at times, Newman. But Priest, obviously he's a rookie at the cup level, but he can be very blunt and straight shooting. So that was awesome. And it was cool to see on Twitter, too, that Daniel Hemric kind of reached out and kind of quoted one of Priest's tweets saying that, it was a bad call and that Priest won the race. Ultimately, he should have won the race. And also, I don't know if you saw this on Twitter, but he quoted Home Track's tweet, Priest did, and said, "It looks Clorox clean to me."
Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
Because Clorox was sponsoring him.
Absolutely awesome.
So, yeah, we need more people like Ryan Preece and to show their bluntness in NASCAR. Neff, we talked about him earlier, but we got Todd Gilliland coming up on the show to talk his second place finish at Gateway over the weekend, and also 2019 as a whole, as we mentioned earlier, has been on the blunt side of Kyle Busch a lot this year. But let's see what Todd Gilliland has to say about Gateway. All right, Todd. You started 11th and finished second at Gateway over the weekend. Overall, take us through your race.
Yeah, I think just starting from unloading off the truck, our Mobil 1 Toyota Tundra was really fast. And, it just really makes it a lot easier. With the rain, we only had one 50-minute practice. So the track got a lot faster as we went. They put a resin down and about, 1.5 grooves up off the bottom, and that just got faster and faster as we went. So you had to really keep up with the adjustments to make your truck go that much faster every run out there. And I feel like when we ended practice in second place, I felt like it was one of my strongest trucks yet this year. So, overall, like I said, just really smooth. And then in the race, we started off, like you said, 11th, and didn't really go anywhere that first run. It was pretty difficult to pass. So, we just got four tires and really took a swing at our race truck. And from there on out, I felt like we had one of the best trucks, and just methodically worked my way up to the front, and was able to get to second, obviously just in the last lap. Wish we could have got there a little bit sooner and maybe contended for the win, but definitely a step in the right direction.
Yeah, like you said, didn't go much the first stage, didn't get any stage points, but you did the second stage and then obviously finished second. So how important is it to make gains throughout the race? Because obviously you don't want to go the other way, but yet a lot of the races this year, like Texas, comes to instance, right? You let a ton of the race early, and then stuff happened late, and ultimately got in the crash.
Yeah, so I feel like last year that was the story of our races too. You know, we'd qualify up front on a lot of the mile and a half, front two rows, and then just kind of slowly lose spots throughout the entire race and finish back half of the top 10. So I kind of like starting further back sometimes. You know, you can kind of get a good feel on your truck and the guys you're racing, but also, you know, to be where we want to, we need to be able to qualify up front and have confidence in my truck. So I feel like we've been getting closer and closer every week. So, like I said, really happy with the direction we're going. And, you know, a lot of these guys turn it up an extra notch at the end. So it's about finding that extra confidence.
And obviously there was that late race restart, I think 7 or 8 to go or whatever, that ultimately gained you a few positions. Obviously, Christian Eckes got spun by Stuart Friesen. But how beneficial was that for you to close the gap and ultimately get that second place finish?
You know, it felt really good. Just any time you can run up front and, you know, really the only way you can learn to be clutch in those late race moments is doing it and being up there in the moment. You know, if you restart 10th with 7 laps to go, you're not really racing for anything. You know, if you gain a few spots, that's really good and all. But when you're racing for a win, the intensity is way different. Your heart rate's higher. You have to train everyone around you to handle those in a better way. So, I feel like just if we can run top 3, top 5, you know, the rest of the season, that when you're in those positions enough, it eventually will fall your way.
Now, at one point late in the race, all 4 KBM trucks that were racing were in the top 5. Was that surprising at all? Obviously, you guys have the equipment, but you guys are so young, especially Chandler, who was only making a second start.
Yeah, you know, I think you've seen us all struggle at times this year, so I think KBM did a really good job this weekend unloading really close as a team. You know, sometimes there's 2 trucks that are good, 2 trucks that are bad. So for all 4 to be really good, 4 different driver styles, really young, like you said, it definitely shows a lot of how hard they're working and how they're bringing better trucks to the racetrack every week. So hopefully we can keep that up. And, you know, as far as Chandler, he's a really good race car driver. So I don't think anyone doubts him when he gets in the truck.
Now, speaking of driving style, Todd, this is your 3rd start at Gateway, 2nd runner-up finish. This track kind of seems to be fitting your driving style. Do you know why?
No, I don't know why. I think my truck's been really good the last 2 years. You know, kind of shifting. I felt like you're trying to drive out of control. So, or at least I was. So, I think that's a lot of fun. You know, maybe just getting a good feel for it. It reminds me a lot of Phoenix, so a little bit more experience there than other places as well. So just a lot of fun, a great racetrack. They are obviously doing everything they can to put on the best racing with putting down resin and PJ1, all the stuff that makes people move around and find a little bit extra grip.
Now, as a whole, it seems like the 4 teams kind of making improvements. Like you said earlier, it seems like you're gaining on it every week. 4 top 10s in the past 5 races, 2 of which were top 5s. How would you gauge 2019 so far?
The beginning third of it was horrible. You know, we barely finished inside the top 10 at all. And that's obviously, outside the top 10, Truck Series field is not very good. So that's where we were aiming, you know. And now that we're running there week in and week out, I think it's time to just make new goals, you know. It's hard to go from running 12th to winning races all at once. So we just set our goals kind of one step at a time, and hopefully, you know, I think the time is right now that we can start contending for race wins. Obviously, with that pole at Texas, that was a really good step in the right direction. We haven't had just that raw speed in a long time. So I think we're back there, and it's about putting together whole races.
And off that, how frustrating has it been? Because like you said, the first third you said was terrible. But how frustrating has it been to, like, is it a lack of speed or just a lack of putting together a full race? Or what do you think's been the biggest struggle?
Everything. We weren't communicating. We didn't have speed. We couldn't finish a race. Anything that could happen was happening in the first half of the season. So, you know, we made a couple changes because, you know, me and Marcus Richmond became really close friends over the past year and a half, obviously working together every week. And we have a lot of respect for each other, but we both thought it was time to make a little bit of a change, kind of push each other in a different way. So I think that was a good thing for both of us. Obviously, he was with Chandler last weekend coming on 4th. So that's the bad thing, because I feel like we had all the puzzle pieces to make it work, but it just wasn't working. So that's what you got to do sometimes. You got to shake it up and just make things a little bit different.
Yeah, and with that, Michael Shelton came over a few weeks back. How's the chemistry going there, and how challenging is it to kind of build a chemistry with a new crew chief right in the middle of the season?
It's a little bit hard, but the main thing with Michael is he's really calm. He's from Alabama. He talks real slow, and just kind of lets me get everything off my chest, and then we kind of go at it, diagnose it. He's really calm on the radio, so I think he's done a really good job so far. You know, I think it's helped that we unload really close and are kind of close to our teammates, so we can all work together a little bit better. But nonetheless, he's a good guy. He's got a lot of experience. I didn't realize all the truck series racing he's done in the past. So kind of hearing some of those stories is cool. And, I think just anytime you can run good, it builds chemistry a lot faster.
Growing up racing, whether it was K&N or even before that, did you ever have a change in the middle of the season on the crew chief side?
No, I think that's one of the main things I wish I had different was basically from the time I started racing stock cars and late models to last year, I had the same crew chief, Chris Lawson. We won a lot of races together, and we were basically like brothers by the end of it. And, it's hard to leave someone like that, but at the same time, I feel like it's one of those things where you have to get used to working with different people. You can't be stuck with one person. And, now I'm realizing that and working harder with the people that I have. So, obviously that was such a good run. You couldn't really, separate us, because of the stuff we were doing at the time. But, now it's a little bit tougher, but we still lean on each other a lot for, a lot of the at track stuff.
Got it. Now, obviously, you and Harrison Byrne are all, both running the full season for KBM. You and Harrison have a lot of history together, growing up, racing against each other. How much do you guys lean on each other to make KBM better?
We lean on each other a lot. We were, pretty much rivals in K&N, racing against each other every single week. If one of us would win, the other one would finish second, and it would basically go back and forth for the whole season, and that was a lot of fun. I think we learned to respect each other a lot from that and each other's ability. So we know that each other can do it and that we can do it ourselves. So it's about just, like I said, putting the right puzzle pieces in place to complete the whole thing.
Now, a few weeks back at Texas, Greg Biffle obviously came back and drove the 51 and won. And I know you saw this, but on Michael Walter's podcast last week, he mentioned that you and Harrison specifically, ask a lot of questions at the competition meeting. And he liked that. He said he never had that at the cup level with Roush, with the Roush guys on the Xfinity level. How important is that for you as a younger driver to lean on veteran drivers when given that opportunity?
You just have to take advantage of it, obviously, Greg Biffle's was the man back in the day at some point in everyone's career. So, I didn't even realize that, it's before the time that I was watching NASCAR and Harrison too. So just to see him and he reminded me a lot of Kyle Busch, honestly. I think it's just the cup driver mentality and the way you have to approach a race weekend was really cool to hear about. And even at times that they weren't the best truck, he could really break it down and tell Rudy and that whole team how to make it better. So I have a lot of respect for Greg. I honestly didn't know how he was going to do going into the weekend, and he beat us all. So he was really open to us. He helped us a lot throughout the week. I think we helped him leading up to the race as well. So it's all about having an open relationship with all your teammates and communicating best as possible.
Now, I know you've heard the public comments from Kyle and him being hard on both you and Harrison. I'm not going to ask you about that, but I do want to ask you, how much pressure do you feel when Kyle speaks out about you guys?
I mean, obviously there's going to be pressure in anything you do. You have to perform, and you're expected to because you have before. So it's kind of a blessing and a curse, like we said here, and because we know we can do it. We've done it before, but it's just about getting back to that weekly performance. So, I think Kyle obviously gets in the trucks and shows us how good they are. So that kind of takes the excuse part out of it on that end, but he helps us a lot too behind the door, closed doors. I don't think he necessarily had to say that stuff on the media, but he's always honest and it's all true what he said. So nothing we can do except kind of accept it and you know, push that a little bit harder next week.
But is it fair for media or for other people to judge the younger drivers off of Kyle Busch, who's obviously a Cup champion, Xfinity champion, won over 200 races? I know Todd Bodine was very vocal about it a few weeks back. I think it was before the Texas pre-race. So, I mean, is it fair?
To me, honestly, I feel like Kyle is one of the best drivers that we'll ever see. So, just the way he can go from any vehicle and destroy everyone, I think, is awesome. And the way he can basically break down, and I feel like he could crew chief anything and be have race winning speed. So, that's one thing that Kyle's really good at. And now, obviously, there's some things that people probably wish they could change about him, but you know, there's a lot of stuff. His ability is one thing you can't argue with. So. I think he's, like I said, going to go down as one of the best, and we're really fortunate to have him as a boss. And like you said, it brings a lot of pressure, but if anything, we can learn from him, and hopefully we're as good as him one day.
Now I got two more for you. On the other side of that, what's the biggest thing Kyle's helped you with since coming to KBM?
I think just communication, listening to him and how he goes through the race weekend, just like Biffle did, you know. It's about knowing the times to push, knowing your situations that you're in, and not getting yourself in trouble.
Now, last one here, Todd. We got five races before the playoffs, obviously going to Chicago this weekend. How much pressure is there to get a win and ultimately make the playoffs?
I mean, obviously, if we don't make the playoffs, it'll be a big disappointment. But now I don't think there's any reason we can't win any of these next five races or all of them. So, we go into every race weekend expecting to win, and that's what we're going to do this weekend in Chicago.
All right, Todd, thanks for joining us. My co-host picked you to win at Chicago, so make him look good, all right?
All right, sounds good.
All right, y'all, there you have it. Fun conversation there with Todd Gilliland about his second-place finish this past weekend at Gateway, as he's obviously on the hot seat at Kyle Busch Motorsports with some of Kyle's comments this season. And I always enjoy talking road racing, so that conversation with Neff about Sonoma was great. I love road racing. Growing up in the Watkins Glen area, attending college at Ithaca, which isn't all that far from Watkins Glen either. So hopefully in August, the race at Watkins Glen will be much better than the one this past weekend at Sonoma. That's it for this week's show. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. And until next week's show, where we review Chicago, we out.